Hello and welcome to the podcast version of Scripps 5 Must Know Things, this time for the business week ended 9th March 2024. This is Ian Haydock. This time, Bayer won't split for now, Pfizer's next-gen ADC pipeline, oncology dominates investment but other areas grow, goodbye Nash, hello MASH, and BMS's CEO gives his views on India. Investors who have been pushing for Bayer to break its three-pillar structure of pharmaceuticals, consumer health and crop science will have to wait for a couple of more years, at least. As CEO Bill Anderson tells journalists that the firm's pipeline, debt, legal and bureaucracy problems need fixing first. Speaking at the German group's annual results conference in London, Anderson noted that Bayer had seriously considered the structure of our company with the help of numerous external advisors and a set of assessment criteria that included valuation levels, speed of execution and timing of cash generation, Kevin Grogan writes. However, while it's running three strong businesses, Bayer was badly broken in four places, and shareholders who have been with us for the past 5 years have experienced the pain of this condition, and our employees have been through multiple rounds of layoffs. All of that has been highly unsatisfactory because the brokenness has not been fixed, he said. Those four broken areas are pharma loss of exclusivities and pipeline prioritization, litigation, debt levels, and hierarchical bureaucracy, he said, saying that the challenges greatly limit our ability to choose our destiny, whether that be as a three-division company or in smaller parts. Anderson argued that at first glance there are valid arguments to make a change. A pure-play structure has become the norm in our industries. It's certainly the simplest approach, and I think we can all understand its appeal. However, you also always have to consider where you're coming from, and today these four broken areas severely limit our access to structural options, he argued. Anderson noted that an initial public offering or a spin-off would require an all-hands-on-deck effort for 18 to 24 months, and cash contributions would be delayed beyond that time frame. In the meantime, the leverage ratios of RemainCo or NewCo could go up significantly, jeopardizing our access to reasonable financing. As for an outright sale, which is only relevant for consumer health in our case, this could be attractive, Anderson acknowledged, and we could pay down some debt with the one-time proceeds. However, a separation would come with significant costs and tax leakage, and we also have some pretty clear indications from comparables that valuations aren't so strong at the moment. We would have to say goodbye to a business that has been generating steady cash every year. Pharma chief Stefan Ulrich noted Bayer had continued to make investments in platform capabilities through earlier stage deals, and the challenge now was to get candidates faster through the funnel, take a very promising early pipeline, and convert it over the next 3 years into a promising late-stage pipeline. He agreed that the loss of exclusivity of Xarelto and Eylea were not small problems, but we have a number of candidates that have blockbuster potential over the coming years, notably elinzanetant for vasomotor symptoms in women going through menopause and the factor 11A inhibitor asundexian. With the acquisition of Seagen late last year, Pfizer has positioned itself as a leader in the field of antibody drug conjugates, or ADCs, for the treatment of cancer. The company offered investors a glimpse of some of the next-generation ADC technologies it is pursuing during an oncology innovation overview on 29th February, Jessica Merrill writes. Much of the meeting was focused on the company's late-stage clinical program and Pfizer's broader cancer strategy following the completion of the $43 billion merger. The company plans to focus on three core modalities in oncology: small molecules, bispecific antibodies, and ADCs. But management also gave a brief look at the earlier stage ADC pipeline, which could be a big driver of longer-term growth. Given the potentially significant commercial opportunity for novel ADCs in large cancer indications and the competitive race within Big Pharma to figure out how to deliver the most potent cytotoxic payloads linked to the most selective antibodies hitting the best targets and providing the least toxicity, investors are eager to hear more about what is coming next in ADCs. To further strengthen our leadership in the ADC space, we are advancing our pipeline with novel targets and diversified linkers and payloads, Chief Scientific Officer for Oncology R&D, Jeff Settleman said. The three commercially available ADC drugs acquired by Pfizer with Seagen, as well as two other US FDA-approved ADCs developed using Seagen's technology, all employ a first-generation payload and linker technology called Vedotin. Pfizer's three commercial products, Adcetris, Padcev, and Tivdak, use the cytotoxic payload monomethyl auristatin E, which continues to be the centerpiece of the late-stage ADC pipeline. Early research at Pfizer is focused on deploying two technologies, topoisomerase 1 inhibitor payloads and next-generation auristatin payloads that could have improved tolerability. In early discovery and preclinical development, Pfizer is working on payloads with even more novel mechanisms of action, including immune agonists and protein degraders. Still in preclinical development is an interesting ADC approach that aims to deliver an immune stimulator TLR7 agonist conjugated to a PD-L1 antibody to the tumor microenvironment. Fewer investment dollars are going to oncology-focused and platform technology companies, but there has been an uptick in investment in disease areas, even at the preclinical stage, that just a few years ago would have had difficulty attracting it. The growing trend was highlighted during a panel that kicked off the Bio, CEO and Investor Conference on 26th and 27th February, Alaric Diarmon writes. Before the panel, Managing Director of HSBC Innovation, Jonathan Norris, presented a report on biopharma investment showing that in 2023 there were 21 venture capital investment deals worth $1.1 billion in the field of autoimmune disorders, as well as 87 deals worth $2.6 billion in the field of neurology. That still paled in comparison to the 162 deals totaling $5.5 billion in oncology, as well as the 120 deals valued at $6.7 billion for platform technologies. But that represented a 27% decrease in funding for oncology compared with 2022. And despite constituting the largest area in terms of dollars, platform technology investment declined 44% year over year in 2023 as the investment focus shifted toward clinical stage assets and away from preclinical platforms, which had seen a boom in investment in 2021 and early 2022. To be sure, venture capital investment overall fell between 2022 and 2023, according to the HSBC report, and a similar report from last year from Silicon Valley Bank. But neurology had seen an increase from $2.5 billion in 2022. In terms of first financings, meaning seed funding and Series A investments, neurology saw an increase from $402 million in 28 deals in 2022 to $675 million in 20 deals in 2023. In other words, while oncology and platform technologies are still bringing in the lion's share of investment dollars, other disease areas are becoming increasingly important as well. Obviously, immunology is much hotter than it ever was, Perceptive Advisors, head of biotechnology investments, Ellen Huckelhoven said during the panel, noting that half of the biotech world is still oncology-driven. But right now, there's obviously a lot of fervour around immunology. Neurology is getting a lot hotter as well, and of course metabolic, Huckelhoven added. The metabolic disease boom is being fuelled by the mega blockbuster potential and meteoric sales growth for GLP-1 agonists from Novo Nordisk and Lilly for obesity. HSBC's Norris highlighted neurology in particular in a subsequent interview with Scrip, pointing out that while investment in platform technologies, much of which has focused on oncology, has declined, there also seems to be an uptick in M&A deals involving preclinical neurology companies that is helping to fuel interest in the disease area. See the story in full and its informative infographics for further breakdowns of the current biopharma deal-making environment and investment focus areas. The shift in terminology from NASH to MASH seems to be taking hold, judging by public statements from companies working in the space, as well as some of the market analysts commenting on developments in metabolic dysfunction-associated steatohepatitis, the disease formerly known as non-alcoholic steatohepatitis, Joseph Haas writes. The nomenclature change is intended to destigmatize the disease by eliminating references to alcohol use and fatty liver, and also clarify what degree of alcohol consumption falls outside the definition of the disease, so that a possibly underemphasized subset of patients will be studied for its medical prognosis and needs. When Akero Therapeutics unveiled 96-week follow-up data from its successful Phase 2b HARMONY study of the FGF21 analogue, efruxifermin, now in Phase 3, it consistently used the term MASH with no mention of the prior disease name in its release or on a related call on 4th of March. But the new nomenclature has not entirely taken hold, with Akero's direct competitor in the FGF21 space, 89bio, using the term NASH on first reference in a 29th February release. In the investment community, the response to the name change has been mixed. During the American Association for the Study of Liver Diseases annual conference on 11th November last year, a panel discussion outlined the decision to change the names of NASH and NAFLD. The determining factor could come when the first MASH-NASH drug therapy reaches market, as whichever disease name the US FDA uses and the sponsor uses in advertising and marketing materials might likely be the one used primarily, if not exclusively, from that point on. Finally, Bristol-Myers Squibb's CEO Christopher Boehner certainly made the job for company recruiters in India easier when he spoke of plans to make its Hyderabad R&D center the largest one outside of the US as early as next year, and pointed to the country's innovation potential in a powerful, spirited keynote address at a recent event in the country. With the advent of artificial intelligence-led drug development, it's felt that India could leapfrog a few stages to establish an advantage in an area of the drug discovery process requiring computing and technical skills that the country has in abundance, Vibha Ravi writes. At the BioAsia 2024 annual summit, the prediction moved closer to reality, with Boehner saying, "Within research, we're using AI to make better molecules faster. In fact, all our small molecule trials will be enabled by AI by the end of this year, and all of this work is or will be happening right here in India." The company expects to deliver over 16 new products in multiple therapeutic areas through 2030. Just a few months into his term as CEO, which officially began in November 2023, Boehner is seeking new growth triggers as the company battles existing and impending loss of exclusivity for blockbuster molecules like Eliquis and Opdivo. These together accounted for 65% of the company's revenues in 2022. By next year, BMS's facility in Hyderabad, set up in 2023 but inaugurated this year, will be its largest site outside of the US. It'll be interesting to watch how BMS balances priorities and asset allocation between this facility and another one in Bangalore in India. The company also has an existing R&D partnership with Biocon's Syngene International, with a dedicated site in Bangalore. In a single year, BMS Hyderabad went from an idea to home to over 900 employees, making BMS the fastest growing company in Hyderabad. Our latest $100 million investment will bring over 1,500 BMS employees together across drug development and global business operations to enhance our innovation capabilities for patients everywhere, Boehner said during his keynote address at BioAsia. On the possibilities of using AI in research, he noted BMS could use its broad experience in autoimmune diseases such as multiple sclerosis and lupus to jump the gap by using AI models trained on thousands of patients to predict features that lead to manufacturing success and to safety, which would be groundbreaking if successful. Pointing to misconceptions regarding innovation, Boehner said, "Here's what I hear a lot. Innovation comes mainly from the US, but clearly that's not the case. Look at all the great scientific advancements and you will see contributions from around the world. And that includes India, which is an undisputed hub of technical expertise." The second misconception is that innovation comes exclusively from corporations. Innovation comes from people who think differently, who reimagine solutions to challenging problems, who welcome that diversity of perspectives. So I wouldn't ask where is the innovation, but rather where are the innovators? They're right here in India. That's why I know it's the right time to expand our presence as a company here in a more meaningful way, because this is a place where people want to solve problems differently," he added. That's all for this week. Many thanks for listening. Please log in to access all of our content, of which these stories represent just a fraction. Or if you don't already subscribe, you can sign up for a free trial to see what you're missing. Bye for now.